Bing bong. I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast, where I've got the man, the myth, the legend, Pierre Rochard in the house, where we discuss his recent lawsuit, how Trump is viewing Bitcoin, and much, much more. So be sure to tune in for another action-packed episode of the State of Bitcoin podcast. And if you haven't already, ladies and gentlemen, smash that subscribe button, tell a friend to tell a friend, and spread the good word of the State of Bitcoin podcast. And remember that everything you hear in this podcast should not be taken as financial advice. It is not financial advice. Strictly the opinion of Pierre myself. And I want you to get your Bitcoin the hell off of an exchange. So I've partnered up with two amazing companies, Foundation. The easiest way to get your Bitcoin off an exchange into cold storage is a Foundation passport. They even have a concierge service if you would like to go through that route and you're not maybe comfortable to do that. So you can go to foundation.xyz, get your Bitcoin off an exchange, and then how are you going to store that seed phrase? Well, I've got it, the answer for you there. A titanium steel punch plate from Stampseed. You can go to stampseed.com, buy the whole kit with their sick-looking hammer, and you can do it all using promo code GREENCANDLE, and you'll get 15% off. That's right, 15% off. At Stampseed, Green Candle will get you $10 off at Foundation. And how are you going to orange pill your friends and family? Well, I've got a nostalgic way for you. That is Bitcoin trading cards. You can utilize the promo code Green Candle. You can get a Genesis pack, or you can even get a cool pack. There's potentially a card of me coming soon. I don't know. I'm putting it out there. So, you know, we might have to get Aladdin on that case. But we've got it all here coming soon. So, enough for me. Let's get into the show. Whoosh. Bing bong. I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast, where I've got the man, the myth, the legend, Pierre Rochard in the house here. And he's just coming off a court case where Elizabeth Warren was attacking Bitcoin mining. So, you know, Pierre, why don't you tell us a little bit about that experience and going into that, you know, fighting the U.S. government and, you know, how they're kind of speculating and attacking Bitcoin mining from the energy side of things, and how maybe they're shifting their view a little bit and coming around.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on. So yeah, this happened earlier this year, but it had been brewing for quite a while. So even a few years ago, there's video of Elizabeth Warren grilling Secretary of Energy, Elizabeth Granholm, about gathering more data on Bitcoin mining. And the angle that Elizabeth Warren has is just that, you know, it's consuming a lot of energy, it's emitting indirect carbon emissions, and that it has grown a lot. And so she wants to have the government gather data on it. Presumably, it would be part of a longer-term strategy of registering all the Bitcoin miners and then banning Bitcoin mining here in the United States. Because Elizabeth Warren wants to pave the way for a CBDC. So she doesn't want Bitcoin competing against a CBDC, a government currency, that would enable her to further control people's financial lives. So she brought it up a few years ago, and then she brought it up again at the previous hearing with the Secretary of Energy. And lo and behold, earlier this year, in January, they issued an emergency survey. Basically, they were able to bypass all of the protections that we have from government paperwork. So there was a Paperwork Reduction Act that exists, that and an Administrative Procedure Act that essentially makes it so that anytime a government agency wants to put out a survey, they have to first publish the survey and get feedback on whether the questions in the survey are good or not. And this is called public notice and comment. So I guess the Energy Department or the people controlling them did not really have any kind of patience for going through the correct process. And they certainly didn't want Bitcoin miners to be providing their feedback in public notice and comment. So they wanted to railroad this through, and you know, it's in my mind, it's a violation of kind of democratic process, right? That we want to have people involved in this kind of process. But in any case, when they did this, their justification for an emergency was that, one, the Bitcoin price had gone up. So during the bear market, Bitcoin went to 17 grand. But then out of the bear market, you know, it was skyrocketing to 60 grand at the time or so. And so that, in their minds, justified an emergency. And then the second was about the electricity grid, essentially saying that the grid is already stressed. And so additional Bitcoin mining on the grid is going to further increase stress and create an emergency. And so, you know, from a legal perspective, it's about, is there a reasonable risk of public harm? And so that's kind of the standard you have to meet to justify having an emergency like this. So we felt like they did not meet that standard, and that in order to provide for due process and rule of law, that we really had an obligation to litigate this and to take them to federal court and to make them, you know, further justify the actions they were taking. Now, so when we took it to court, it was here in Texas because we have our operations here in Texas. And so it was kind of the natural venue for doing that. And we filed our case. The judge looked at it, and it seems like, based on how things went, the judge immediately saw what was happening, which was that, and we put this in the court filing, that Senator Elizabeth Warren was applying political pressure to what is supposed to be a nonpartisan, apolitical agency, and in order to weaponize it against her political enemies, you know, her ideological enemies of Bitcoin miners. And so the judge basically immediately said, okay, well, there's going to be a temporary restraining order, and the Department of Energy has to destroy all of the data they've collected. They have to withdraw the survey. And if they want to do it again, they have to follow the correct process. Now, what was really surprising in this is that the government immediately surrendered. They didn't try to put up a fight. So it seems like they themselves understood that they were skating on thin ice, and that, you know, there was not any kind of back and forth to be had on this topic for a number of reasons. One is that ERCOT, the grid operator in Texas, has a very rigorous regulatory process to get approval for connecting a load like a Bitcoin miner to the grid, or a generator for that matter. And these studies are done in order to prevent public harm. And so what the Department of Energy was essentially doing was accusing ERCOT of not, you know, doing their job, which is absurd. ERCOT does a great job at evaluating loads and making sure that everything is going to work out well. The second really big problem was that when we look at the use of Bitcoin mining, so when are Bitcoin miners turned on and when are they turned off? They are turned on when there's excess electricity. So it's not uncommon here in Texas for there to be negative electricity prices because there's too much wind and too much solar being produced. And that's basically 99% of the time is there's extra electricity on the grid for whoever needs it. Less than 1% of the time, there's not enough electricity. And that during that time, the price of electricity, so there's a real-time market for the electricity. So during those times, the price of electricity goes through the roof. And it's completely uneconomical to mine Bitcoin during those periods of time, which usually are in the evening when the sun is setting, so the solar is ramping down to zero, and when there's not enough wind offsetting that. And so during those times, Bitcoin miners turn off, because they would be operating at a loss if they stayed on. So it was clear that Bitcoin miners don't contribute to stressing the grid during those hours. And then outside of those times, they're actually providing a very positive effect, which is to pay for power generation so that then there's more power generation that comes to the state of Texas. And so then it actually reduces the likelihood of having blackouts because we've attracted more power generation to the state. So, you know, that I think that at the end of the day, the Department of Energy understood this, but that they were caving to extreme political pressure from Elizabeth Warren. And so that's really why they didn't want to fight it, because they knew that it was a losing battle that they had been sent into by a third party. And, you know, I think that now it's really a political problem for Elizabeth Warren, because she has single-handedly in many ways driven a narrative that Democrats are anti-Bitcoin, which is not true. It's actually it's not true at all. There's most Democrats are not anti-Bitcoin. It's a very small minority within the Democratic Party that's anti-Bitcoin. But because Elizabeth Warren is so loud and adamant about her perspective, she has created this false narrative that is going to have both fundraising implications for Democrats. They're not going to be able to raise money from Bitcoiners or from the crypto ecosystem at large. And then, of course, at the ballot box, they're losing votes. And they're not gaining any votes from this. The people that like these anti-Bitcoin policies, they were going to vote for Elizabeth Warren regardless. So really, she's set up a lose-lose of losing votes, losing fundraising. And then on the other side, the loudest Republican is Donald Trump. And Donald Trump is, you know, President Trump, former President Trump, he is loudly coming out and saying, I am pro-Bitcoin. I will protect your right to mine Bitcoin here in the United States. I will protect your right to hold your private keys. And so, you know, in some ways, and it's funny because I'll see people say, oh, well, these are campaign promises. You can't, you know, trust a politician to keep campaign promises. I agree with you. Or I agree with that perspective that there are some campaign promises that are unrealistic. But this campaign promise is the easiest one to keep, because all he's saying is we're going to maintain the status quo. He's not like promising lots of money for, you know, some kind of program or anything where he would need legislative action. No, he's basically saying we're going to stop attacking you, which takes less work than attacking. So I think that he is going to keep those campaign promises. And that if anything, we might be surprised in the other direction, where he would go beyond his campaign promises and really have a very pro-Bitcoin policy. But in any case, this creates a tremendous political problem for Democrats. They have to come out and disavow the Elizabeth Warren wing and distance themselves from these unwarranted attacks on Bitcoiners and Bitcoin mining.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because, yeah, I mean, Trump straight up named Elizabeth Warren, I think, in one of his campaign rallies. He's like, you know, I will not let Elizabeth Warren come and take your Bitcoin, the way he said. Yeah. It was always cracks me up. But, you know, with that, you know, you said most Democrats are not anti-Bitcoin. But yeah, the narrative is definitely coming around, especially, you know, when Elizabeth Warren gets brought up. And, you know, we also got the election coming up down in November. Do you think that's going to be a major talking point here going forward? I mean, obviously, we've had RFK Jr. gain a ton of popularity as an independent candidate, and on the backs of a lot of, you know, backing the dollar by, you know, hard assets, including Bitcoin. And then, you know, now we got Trump speaking on it. But we haven't really heard President Biden say too much about it. And not really make too many headlines. Do you think that this is going to be a major talking point, or this is more of a, you know, kind of a Bitcoin Twitter kind of click around and kind of a spread of information that way?
Yeah, so I think it really depends on how Biden's campaign team handles the issue, because they did back off a little bit and start making some overtures, or they at least told journalists that, oh, we're going to meet with crypto people and, you know, sort things out. But that might have been pretty empty. I mean, I think that if Biden wants to dig in and make this a campaign issue, he absolutely can. you know, he can accuse Trump of, you know, of siding with crypto and Bitcoin and how they're terrible for the environment and only criminals use them. He could certainly dig in and take that position and really turn it into a strong partisan issue. The problem he has is that so all of these politicians, they receive numbers from the polling agencies saying, here's what's polling well, here's what's polling poorly. And what we saw with the recent accounting bulletin that was voted against by in Congress was that Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer sided with the pro-crypto side. And so what Biden would be doing would be breaking with his legislative cohort. And the, you know, the legislators, the reason why they are saying, hey, let's tone it down, let's be a little bit more pro-crypto, is because they don't want to lose the Senate. And they have the House by a very, you know, they could get the House back. It's very thin right now. But they could lose the Senate if they go hard against crypto. And it you know, on one hand, yeah, it's kind of an echo chamber on Twitter. But on the other hand, some of these Senate races, they can be decided by 1,000 votes, right? So that's enough. And, you know, there's millions of people who are in some way or another interested in crypto and, you know, might be holding some or look favorably towards it. So I think that the smart move for the Biden team would be to come out and say, we're replacing Gary Gensler. He's gone. We made a mistake with him. And we're replacing Marty Greenberg at the FDIC. You know, he's a mess as well. And that they would put in people who are pro-crypto. And that then they would rescind their SOB 121, close out some of their SEC litigation against altcoins, you know, kind of just back off. That would be the smart move to make. The clock is running. It's June. The election's in November. So I don't think that's the strategy that they're adopting. I think that what they might do is just kind of wait and see. So not make any big moves over the coming months and try to get reelected without shifting on crypto policy.
Now, you've been using crypto a lot, and I've heard you in other interviews. I know you don't necessarily like to use that terminology, but, you know, when it comes to, like, I guess the greater, like, crypto mining landscape, it seems like the altcoins, the shit coins, all those other people outside of Bitcoin, that's their biggest driver against Bitcoin is the use of the energy. Now, that would make me kind of believe that they would want maybe like kind of go for these Elizabeth Warren policies on that side of things. Are you seeing that? Or are you seeing, I guess, you know, that the altcoins kind of realizing like, hey, we can't let Bitcoin fail, or we can't let Bitcoin be, you know, I guess, or let policies kind of deeply affect Bitcoin, because at the end of the day, it's a trickle down effect and it hurts us as well. So are you seeing them, I guess, supporting that, where they're going quite against energy, the energy use of Bitcoin mining, or are they kind of still siding with the Bitcoin mining, Bitcoin miners, and understanding that, you know, the use of energy allows for, you know, a society to prosper?
Yeah. So, I mean, at the policy level, I have to use the word crypto. I mean, the reality is that it very much is a bundle. And as much as we disagree with, you know, the differences between Bitcoin and everything else, the thing is that Elizabeth Warren, she's anti-Bitcoin, she's anti-Ethereum, she's anti-Dogecoin. Like, you know, she's not picking favorites. And then on the other end, you know, Trump, he's pro-NFTs, pro-Ethereum, pro-Bitcoin, pro-stable coins, right? So it very much is bundled together. And that, you know, to me as a Bitcoiner, I don't really care, because I really, the way I see it is that all of these other assets, they lose by diluting each other out. And so it's an economic process. It's not a political process. And so from that perspective, you know, I don't really care. And in fact, I'd say that it is good for us to ally with Ethereum people on policy issues. They have not lobbied against Bitcoin mining. And the reason why is that the trade associations like Digital Chamber of Commerce, Blockchain Association, Coin Center, others, Texas Blockchain Council, you know, they're big tents. And so there really would not be any kind of patience for any members trying to attack other members of the same organization. Now, there's also Bitcoin-only policy organizations like Bitcoin Policy Institute, SATS, you know, the Satoshi Action Fund, that are doing great work as well by being laser focused on Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining. So I think that eventually when when things are settled at the policy level for, you know, for crypto, then we'll have time for more nuance of, hey, if we're going to have the government start a strategic reserve, it had better be Bitcoin only. I mean, it would be absurd to have some hyperinflationary, you know, cryptocurrency in there as well. And so there's definitely, I think it's Bitcoin only advocacy in the, at the policy level is still very important. But I think that if we adopt a strategy of separating ourselves, then we end up weaker. And, you know, yeah, that's it. Now, I will say that Ripple and XRP, they have funded anti-Bitcoin mining, Greenpeace, FUD, and shame on them for doing that. Now, it has been a disaster for them. They've gotten nothing for spending $5 million. And Greenpeace's brand is tarnished. So, you know, you don't attack Bitcoin if you have something to lose. So I think that they got to rethink their strategy there. But at the policy level, yeah, it is bundled together as crypto. And it'll take a while to unbundle that. And it'll really be issue by issue.
Yeah, and I think that's the way it's going to go, right? I think a lot of, I guess the greater crypto whatever world is going to have to band together. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, you nailed it on the head there. It is a shame that XRP and Ripple have tried to attack Bitcoin, but it seems like, you know, they're doing it for their own, you know, gain opposed to like the greater good of, you know, what Bitcoin is being used for. Now, you know, obviously you guys have a big base in Texas, and it's come to a big part is, you know, of what you guys do at Riot is helping balance the grid, right? And it seems like the state of Texas has kind of been at the forefront with that. You know, I mean, I think last summer and in the winter, you know, that you mentioned the 1% of times of needing to, you know, kind of like shut off Bitcoin mining. But last year, I believe it was 23 that there was an extremely hot summer. And then in Texas, there was a wild winter as well. Now, with all that being said, like, is because Texas is so friendly, why so many Bitcoin miners are there? Is it the climate? You know, why is, you know, Texas kind of at the forefront of this? And why don't we see more states adopt, you know, Bitcoin miners kind of integrating into the grid when, you know, you just kind of like lined out all the benefits? And, you know, after this, you know, court case filing, after, you know, essentially them shutting it down very, very quickly, why aren't we seeing more states kind of getting involved? Or maybe we are, I haven't just really heard of it. Are we getting more states that are interested in the US in, you know, kind of utilizing Bitcoin mining in grids to help balance?
Yeah, so, I mean, there's definitely Bitcoin mining in pretty much every state. Now, why so much of it is concentrated in Texas? The regulatory environment is one piece of it, where it goes beyond them just being friendly towards Bitcoin mining. It's that they move more quickly than other grids do, and so you're able to get connected faster. So there's an element of speed there, and then on the energy cost, Texas has an all of the above strategy to energy. And it's really well geographically positioned in terms of natural resources to be able to deliver low cost electricity. So it has a wind corridor in West Texas. It has a lot of sun for solar, and it has a lot of natural gas underground. And so when you combine those three factors now, and the natural gas is a byproduct of drilling for oil. So when oil is expensive and they're drilling for oil, they will bring up natural gas. Even if it's cheap, they bring it up, and then, you know, it drives the price of natural gas down and makes it very economical to, run natural gas turbines here in Texas. So it's really the low cost electricity as a consequence of the geography, the natural resources of Texas, that is a huge advantage, where in lots of other parts of the world, you would have to import that energy, and that is expensive.
Now, and you know, it seems like there is, and Texas has always been very energy dense, right? I mean, I grew up in Austin. Houston's like a big oil hub, and basically it's like Houston and New Orleans if you want to work in the oil and gas industry. And it seems like that's kind of continued to stay. But a lot of other states have kind of moved away towards, trying to find like renewable energies, doing the whole green energy policy and things like that. But obviously it's kind of shifted a little bit, right? Where Bitcoin is looked at as more of like utilizing renewable energy and green energy. Now, do you still think that we're going to still, I guess, move towards that or do you think we're moving away from that FUD, of that Bitcoin is not for clean energy and that Bitcoin energy is not green? Do you think like we're starting to see a shift in that tide?
Well, I think that, on one hand, Texas has one of the cleanest grids. And we have to keep in mind that natural gas is like way cleaner than coal is, right? So some people still think that Texas is like 100% coal, when now it's 10% coal and declining. And so natural gas emits half as much CO2 as coal does. And then when you look at what I would call real pollution, like particulate matter, it's orders of magnitude less. And so it's a very clean grid. There's more Bitcoin mining here in Texas than any other state. So I think that narrative has to shift. Now, the thing is, though, when you're trying to generate renewable electricity in other places in the United States, you know, if you're trying to use solar in the north, it's just not going to be very effective. The amount of sunshine you get is not sufficient to make it economical. And so, you know, likewise, there's places where there's not enough wind. If we want zero carbon electricity, in a lot of places, nuclear is going to be the best option. But for many different reasons, whether it's regulatory or not, nuclear is expensive. It's arguably too expensive for Bitcoin mining, but perhaps with economies of scale and improvements in the regulatory environment, nuclear could get to a much more competitive cost position.
Yeah, and I think like we're going to start to see the shift towards nuclear. But I kind of mentioned it a little bit earlier, and I want to hear your combative or your argument against it. But another argument that I hear a lot on the crypto side of things is that the use of energy is a bad thing. I'll get into my little rant about it afterwards. But what is usually I guess your rebuttal when you hear that FUD? Because I think that is kind of the new FUD starting to circulate this cycle around.
Yeah, so Bitcoin's energy use is downstream of where the revenue is coming from, right? For the Bitcoin mining reward. So about 5-2% of the mining reward is transaction fees. So that's about, decentralized ordering of transactions into the ledger so that there's no double spending. The other 95% of the energy use is going into the issuance of Bitcoin, right? The block subsidy, the new Bitcoin being added to the ledger, and that gets cut in half every 4 years. So, all else equal, the use of energy gets cut in half every 4 years for the subsidy. Now, there's an interesting question of how do these other cryptocurrencies add units to the ledger? You know, Ethereum, they did it in a centralized way. So on day zero, they manually added units to the ledger based on the results of their IPO presale, you know, back in the day. So that's one way to do it, is to do it in a centralized manner. The only decentralized way of issuing the asset is through proof of work. So, you know, and I think this might speak to why deep down in her reptilian brain, Elizabeth Warren really hates Bitcoin mining, is that it is destroying seniorage, right? Seniorage being the monopoly profits from being able to prevent other people from competing to issue the currency. So if you use your printer at home to print $100 bills, you get arrested, right? But that's how they keep their profit margins. So then when they print a $100 bill, they make $100. You know, they're not, and they don't want anyone competing with that. So the reason why Bitcoin has energy consumption, primarily 95% of it, is about decentralized issuance of the currency and, you know, putting that power back in the hands of the people, and making sure that there's no monopoly profits. Rather, the value gets funneled into the energy sector, right, of generating electricity for the most part, but also lots of great blue-collar jobs in rural areas, which is also something that I imagine Elizabeth Warren doesn't really care for.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there. And then on the other point is, like, you know, the law of conservation of energy, like one of the more basic things, like, right, energy can neither be created nor destroyed. And I think people really think that, you know, when they make this argument that we're like creating energy out of thin air, but at the end, it just, you know, it encourages the use of renewable energy, of energy sources that we would never have captured before. And with all that being said, you know, when we've seen societies prosper in the past, it's basically based on the amount of energy that they can capture and utilize for themselves to help, you know, that society prosper. So I think, like, all in all, it's just an interesting kind of new way that they're spinning it and, you know, looking at it that way. And yeah, I mean, it creates jobs, it creates, you know, new opportunities, it creates, you know, a lot more things, and it encourages, you know, the efficient use of energy as well, you know, where you can try to, you know, get as much bang for your buck when it comes to, you know, Bitcoin mining. So I think, like, that it is going to be moving towards that way, and it already has been, right? I mean, I think a massive amount of, you probably know the numbers better off the top of your head as to how much is renewable energy. But, you know, I always just find it interesting that that's the FUD, when at the core, like, what everybody learned in physics and, you know, like high school or maybe even middle school, is that, you know, just the generic law of conservation of energy. And they neglect that point and they try to convolute it. And I think that's what a lot of people, you know, when they're getting into Bitcoin or they're getting into, you know, economics or just some simple things, as, you know, the simple supply and demand, simple, you know, law of conservation of energy, like these simple topics can help make the society so much better. And it's like, you know, at the end of the day, fix the money, fix the world. But people try to make it way more complex than it is. And, you know, I just think that they're essentially just muddying the waters in order to keep power. But at the end of the day, like I said, I mean, I just don't see why, you know, you can get away from this, the fact of the matter that, you know, energy can never be created nor destroyed. And we're getting back to that, you know, with the Bitcoin mining, and we're able to capture a lot of it through the use of renewable energy. And I think that that's going to continue. And so, yeah. Go ahead.
Well, another point on the renewable energy is that the proponents of renewable energy say that it's the lowest cost form of energy. And so if that's true, then Bitcoin mining will become 100% renewable. And further, that, you know, they say, oh, well, that renewable energy should be going towards other uses. Well, Bitcoin mining is about 24 gigawatts. So it's not really, you know, it's not a lot. And so if renewables can't scale where 24 gigawatts would be meaningful, to that equation, then there's a separate problem going on in their supply chain.
Yeah, 100%. And I agree with you there. And so, you know, when it comes to like the development of, renewable energies and different projects, right, we've seen the development of, the volcano, capturing geothermal energy in El Salvador. We've seen a lot of, hydro plants pop up, the forefront of nuclear, right? I mean, you mentioned it a little bit earlier. Why hasn't there been more of a push to move towards more nuclear energy? Or maybe there has, and I just haven't seen too much of it as I'm not in the weeds, but what is it going to take in order for us to kind of move that way?
Yeah. So there has been a big shift, and including here in Texas, where there's a lot more interest in developing nuclear. So it's something that it just takes a long time. It's a long lead time. You got to get it right so that you don't have a meltdown. And quite often, other technologies, it's pretty easy to put up solar panels, right? It's not like you need 15 years of studies or anything like that. So, but I think that nuclear will happen. It's going to take a while.
Yeah. So, all right. So, define a while, I guess. Do you have like I'm putting you on the spot here.
Yeah. No, like a couple of decades, for it to scale up.
Okay. And then, so yeah, the couple of decades for it to scale up. So it's more of, I guess, the long time horizon here. And, you know, maybe we're just in the age of the internet and I haven't seen an update here in a few months. So maybe that's why I feel like I haven't really heard too much, but I feel like that is the next logical step. Obviously the renewables and everything like that, but it seems like from the renewable side of things, you said it's not difficult, to put up solar panels and wind. From my understanding, that's not super effective in, converting energy, and then, the solar panels can't really be recycled very well, and they're made out of a lot of harmful plastics and things like that. So why was there such a narrative that, solar and wind and all those things, even though there are, trade-offs and problems with that, why do you think that was, I guess, originally considered green energy when, it seems like it's not necessarily that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So to be clear, solar and wind do make sense in particular places at particular times. And so it's not like they have no role in the energy system. Why they became kind of a fixation of the green environmentalist movement, it really comes down to religious reasons. So a lot of these green environmentalists, they'll say that they are atheists, but it doesn't take long to realize that they are in fact pagan Gaia worshipers. And so for them, the wind and the sun are, gods that they want to be in communion with by these technologies. And so it really goes beyond any kind of rational economic thought process and into one of religious dogma.
Wow, really? I was not expecting that answer from you. And that was kind of a twist in some way, shape, or form that I wasn't really anticipating. But yeah, I guess, I have to believe on that. I'm not really sure how to come back from that. But, I guess it makes sense because it doesn't really seem logical. And I guess that would be kind of the only explanation that you could kind of really put behind it is, they just kind of fully believe that the wind and the sun will solve all problems, even though it's not necessarily, a green, quote unquote, green energy policy. But
well, look, the sun is the largest nuclear reactor, right, in our neighborhood. And they don't like nuclear when it's humans doing it because they see it as us playing God, right? That in a way we're like creating life, by ourselves being the prime mover behind the nuclear reaction. And so it's to them, it's unnatural. And they only want things that are natural. And so receiving nuclear energy using photovoltaics, that is okay, for them, but doing it ourselves much more efficiently, right, using nuclear, that's not okay. So now there's that, but there's also geostrategic reasons. So foreign adversaries have an interest in providing funding to green environmentalist movements in the West to sabotage Western energy systems so that the West is impoverished and so that it is dependent on, for example, importing natural gas from Russia. And so, you know, that's another factor to consider.
Yeah. And it seems like, yeah, that has been kind of like a monetary or an energy kind of arm that, that Russia has been pulling, you know, throughout this whole, you know, Ukraine and Russia conflict. Obviously there's a lot of geopolitical tensions going on and other things like that, where, you know, one could argue that the U.S. has been pulling the monetary arm by keeping the, you know, interest rates very high, and Russia and the BRICS nation have been pulling the energy arm by, you know, essentially just cutting off the supply, or you know, kind of attacking it that way. But you know, we have like a big, you know, developing field here in Bitcoin mining, and we recently just had the halving here in this past May. So you know, with that being said, you know, what are some of the big developments that you're seeing on the institutional level of Bitcoin mining to kind of help you know, one, combat you know, the increase or the decrease, you know, block reward that you're earning every single day, and you know, kind of keep those Bitcoin mining companies like going strong and developing and keeping that network online?
Yeah, I think maybe a trend is that we're seeing a separation between what we might call the true believers, you know, the real Bitcoiners in the mining industry versus those who were in it to make a quick buck, you know, the fiat maxis. And so because the latter, now they're thinking about AI and high performance computing and exiting Bitcoin mining, basically, or at least trying to move away from it. You know, versus others that are continuing to stay focused on Bitcoin mining because they're bullish on Bitcoin. Now, it's actually to the benefit of the true believers that the tourists leave, right? Because then that's less competition, less hash rate, more market share, you know, better economics. So I won't argue against it, but that is a trend.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, you know, obviously Core Scientific is a different company than you work for, but I just saw today that they were offered to be a $1 billion purchase from them, from a cloud computing company called CoreWeave, and they denied it. So it seems like, yeah, it is a trend of more like data centers trying to get in and get in with these Bitcoin miners who have, you know, essentially utilized what we've been describing here, like finding ways to get cheap energy, you know, putting up renewable plants, utilizing energies and grids all over the globe. But the data centers is kind of like the new buzzword that people are trying to get into, especially with the you know, movement into AI. So, you know, with that being said, like, are you guys being, I don't know if you could disclose too much, but outside of that, you know, you know, are you guys being approached by, you know, potential AI data centers and things like that to kind of continue that movement towards that? Or are you guys sticking strictly with Bitcoin mining and that's where you're going to, you know, continue that there at Riot?
So we see the opportunity in vertical integration in a different way, right? So we acquired an electrical equipment manufacturer, ESS Metron, and they sell plenty of equipment to data centers as well as to Bitcoin miners. Now, so for us, it's a win-win because demand is growing for that equipment and we get to secure our own supply chain for our own Bitcoin mining operations. And likewise, you know, we made an equity investment in a company called Reformed Energy that is tackling the issue of landfill. So converting trash into electricity and then into Bitcoin. So, you know, the power generation and electronics equipment, electrical equipment vertical, it makes a lot of sense from a business perspective to integrate that way and to stay focused on Bitcoin mining while finding complementary industries like that.
Yeah, and I think that's a trend that, you know, that I like that you're kind of lining out there, right? Where it's, you know, utilizing different energy sources. I know I've heard of places utilizing cow manure, kind of converting that into energy. I think that that's going to be a growing trend too. So utilizing poop to kind of mine Bitcoin is kind of a wild thing to think about. But, you know, last bull run, we did see a lot of, you know, Bitcoin miners kind of, you know, get real antsy, leverage their Bitcoin miners and, you know, kind of try to capitalize on the giant bull run. Now, you guys obviously stuck around and, you know, sticking around through the bull and bear market kind of teaches you guys a lot of lessons. Now, how are you guys like prepared and going into this next bull run and kind of looking at like keeping Bitcoin on the balance sheet when it comes to, you know, what you're mining and, you know, like I said, on this bull run going forward?
Yeah, absolutely. So Riot has been growing its Bitcoin HODL on the balance sheet. And that, you know, during the bear market, we invested a lot in infrastructure to lay the groundwork to be able to be plugging in machines at this point. So, you know, in our monthly update, you'll see that we are aggressively increasing hash rate and that will continue for the foreseeable future. Because we've got a big goal over the coming years to get to 100 exahash. So that is really, you know, how we're positioned for the bull market is having lots of Bitcoin on the balance sheet and then having lots of growth in the pipeline.
Now, you know, do you view like, does Riot view, I guess, like Bitcoin on the balance sheet as like a long-term hold? Do you guys have, you know, a good like cash reserves as well, just in case to kind of ride the waves of that volatility? Or do you look at, you know, Bitcoin on the balance sheet as more of a, I guess, a positive thing and, you know, what you're utilizing it for the long run?
Yeah, so the Bitcoin on the balance sheet are really long-term strategic reserve. We've got plenty of dollars on the balance sheet that are for investing into growth. And that's what those dollars are being put towards.
Gotcha. Yeah, so you guys have some big things ahead, right? So you said that, what was the end goal that you guys had by the end of this year? How many exit hash?
I'd have to check. I don't want to give a wrong number off the top of my head. You know, we're developing the Corsicana facility to be 400 megawatts by the end of the year. So that's really, you know, quite substantial. And then also making improvements to the Rockdale facility simultaneously.
Yeah, so you guys have some big things going ahead. So, yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to what you guys are doing, and I appreciate you coming on the show and detailing all about the, you know, the court case that you guys just got out and, you know, what's ahead for Riot. So why don't you tell people where they could find you and where they can find out more about Riot?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at Bitcoin Pierre, on X, I guess now. You know, Riot is at Riot Platforms on Twitter as well. Watch out for impersonators. There's lots of people trying to impersonate. So make sure you follow the right one.
There we go. And I'll put all that in the show notes. So Pierre, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. This is great.